Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. I'm your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Today, Debbie Vini, a senior vice president at the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools, joins us to discuss the growth of the charter sector since the pandemic. Then, on the Research Minute, Amber reports on a new study investigating the impacts of coaching on teacher efficacy. All this on the Education Gadfly Show.
This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Reflect on their 3 weeks of teaching experience.
Right. I'm reflecting that I'm miserable and I feel like I'm sinking.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at fordhaminstitute.org. And now, please welcome our special guest for this week, Debbie Vini. Debbie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, great. Well, Debbie is a senior vice president at the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools. So you can guess we are going to talk about public charter schools today. Joining us, as always, our resident big fanboy of charter schools, David Griffith.
Yeah, Mike, I'm a researcher, just to be clear. So
I know you are. And because of your research, you've become a big fan of charter schools. There's nothing wrong with that.
Sure. Perhaps it's just the way you put it.
All right. Okay. Sorry. Research fanboy. All right. I'll work on that.
Neutral researcher. Yes. Guided by the research.
There we go. All right. Fair enough. Hey, everybody. Happy New Year. This is our first podcast of 2024. I am choosing to believe that this is going to be a great year, you know, for the world, for education reform, for all things. And look, it's early in the year, so I don't have the optimism wearing off yet. But what do you think, Debbie? Shall we be optimistic about things out there in the real world of schools and kids and classrooms?
I'm downright bullish. Always optimistic.
All right. Well, good. Well, one reason to be optimistic is this latest report from the National Alliance, which is looking at enrollment trends in charter schools. Let's look at that on Ed Reform Update. Okay, Debbie, so this new report that came out just at the end of 2023 looked at enrollment trends. You do this every year, but in this one, you were especially able to look at pre-pandemic to post-pandemic trends. This has been a time when traditional public schools have been losing students, partly because of pandemic issues, but also just because of the baby bust that started after the Great Recession. There's just fewer kids coming in. We've also had a decline in immigration, at least during the pandemic. That's, of course, now ticking back up again. What are the trends for public charter schools?
Well, we are continuing to trend upwards. So we had a major spike, which I think everybody could have predicted, the first school year after the pandemic, and we were flat the next year. And a bunch of folks, including those in our own sector, were wondering, was there going to be a reversal of enrollment? Were people going to go back to where they were before? That didn't happen. And then in this past school year, we continued to grow, whereas district schools continued to be flat.
Yeah. So upward trends for charter schools. Again, those of us that believe that charter schools are providing great options for kids, which is what the research is showing, this is good news. So what else? Are there certain parts of the country or certain types of schools where we see particularly strong growth?
It's been really very strong the entire time, and they continue to be so. I'd say the same was also true with Florida and North Carolina. Those are our biggest growing states. But being a numbers guy like you are, I'm certain that you'll appreciate that there were some factors on the ground in states like Texas, North Carolina, Florida, that enabled more growth. And we saw that there was an overall growth in school choice, with charter schools being a really important part of it, but just all of the parts were growing. And in places like, let's take a Washington, D.C., where it's already a pretty strong charter sector, but not really a lot of space to grow, then you didn't see numbers grow because there weren't seats available. So pretty much wherever there were seats, people grabbed them up. Where there weren't, they chose other types of school choice.
So that's a really good and important point, Debbie, is that we're not always talking about new schools, right? And that is one that has certainly been the driver of growth over the long term, over the last several decades. But there's other ways to grow. You've got existing schools that are adding grades or that are getting bigger, or just existing schools that have space, right? And then the kids are coming in and filling up those schools. There is this perception, I get the impression, Debbie, that a lot of people feel like, oh, well, the charter movement now is pretty well built out, especially in big cities. You know, you've got these places where 30, 40, 50% of the kids are in charter schools. And so, you know, to grow that is a lot harder to go from, you know, 40 to 50%, let's say, of the district market share than to go from, you know, 5% to 10%. You know, there's more resistance and there's just more competition. But, you know, David and our colleague Luna here at Fordham put out a research report before the new year as well, finding that there's still places that have room to run, including some of those places you mentioned, right? Texas, still some pretty big sized districts with room to run, like El Paso, North Carolina, where you've got a bunch of these kind of mid-sized cities. You know, the Winston-Salems and of the state that still have plenty of room to run. So, I mean, what's your take on this? Are people in the charter movement trying to find those places where there's still potential, especially in those urban areas?
For sure. Parent demand has not waned. And so those who say that the sector is mature and kind of like leveling off, and really not looking at what's happening in the world. Parent demand for charter schools remains exceptionally high, even in places where you have a lot of schools that exist already, like a DC. So where we see that there is space and conditions that make it a little bit better, absolutely we see greater take up. But you know, Washington State's an interesting place too. So they're a newer state with respect to having a charter law. They don't have a ton of schools, about 19, but their growth has been phenomenal. So they've got a cap actually on the number of new charter schools that can grow, but we've seen the enrollment by percentage up like 75% over like this 3-year period. So people like them.
Yeah. And of course, there's plenty of places where we could serve more kids in charter schools, except for those caps, right? I mean, you think about New York City that still has, for, you know, a huge city, lots of charter schools, but still could serve way more, but we're hitting a cap there. And you see that in other places too. David, what's on your mind as you look at these numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would just reinforce the point that's been made. There is a tendency to focus on outliers, frankly, because they're so compelling, right? And so everybody knows about New Orleans and, you know, maybe like 5 or 6 other places, really, where you could maybe argue that we're starting to, you know, saturate the market. But if you actually count them up, I mean, it's just simply not true of San Francisco, right? Like, it's simply not true of Seattle or Portland or New York City. There's a big one, right? I mean, I don't know how else to push back against the narrative, but it's not true. And I don't know. I'm personally on the warpath against education reform's tendency to chase after the next sort of shiny object, right? I mean, I love new ideas. I work at a think tank, for crying out loud. You know, think tanks are all about new ideas that may or may not work in the real world. But what I love even more than new ideas are proven strategies, you know, that work in the real world. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm an incrementalist, right? And I think people tend to underestimate the impacts of steady incremental progress over a 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 year period. You know, we all want things to go a little faster than they do, but in the real world, they don't. And so I guess I just, my core emotion, right, is that we just need to stick to, you know, what we've been doing and what we know works, and not get distracted and not sort of throw in the towel based on kind of a really surface level analysis of what's going on that doesn't withstand any scrutiny.
Yeah, no, look, and that's well said. And it aligns up with something Jed Wallace wrote in Education Next, again, also before the new year. He said, you know, that the headline was something like charter schools keep on keeping on. And that could be the headline of this report too, right, Debbie? I mean, it is incremental growth. Everybody wants to write about education savings accounts. They're getting, you know, it's controversial. It's in the news. That's, you know, you can have whatever your views on those, fine. But, you know, in the background, here go charter schools, slow and steady wins the race.
That little engine that could. And I'm really glad you brought up the ESA thing, too, because we were curious about that. And we're continuing to keep our eye on it. But we were really watching Arizona, particularly with their universal ESA. And we're trying to see like, okay, what kind of an impact might that have on charter schools? Would everybody like leave and run over to grab their voucher and go somewhere else? And that's not true. Our numbers have held steady. We do not see a decline in enrollment or in parent demand in Arizona. While the, you know, other sectors are also doing their things, it's like, choice is good. People like choice. They like all different kinds of choice. And for parents who think that a charter school is the right school for their kids, they continue to believe that. And they're not swayed by the ability to try other types of things necessarily. Just because ESAs are there doesn't mean that they're going to abandon their charter school if it's working for their kid.
Well, that is very well said. We're going to leave it there, Debbie. Thank you so much for coming on the show and letting us know about these latest data. I hope you'll come back on sometime soon.
I always would love to. Thanks, Mike. And thanks for the great work you guys are doing.
All right. Thank you. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mike.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Did you have a nice break? Do anything exciting?
I did have a nice break. I did. Well, I don't know if it's exciting. It just felt really good to rest and be with family and friends and do holiday stuff, you know? And I don't know. I was just saying to you guys before we started recording, it's long enough to feel like a real break. Like you just didn't take a breather, but you actually got to regroup and, you know, relax and I don't know, feel energized for the new year.
Yes. And those are all things you feel, unlike David, who has small children at home. So a long holiday break lands a little bit differently for people like David.
Doesn't it, though?
Like, I did nothing but watch Michigan football games all break, just for you.
Okay. I know you're lying because there was, of course, only one Michigan football game all break. And yes, let's talk about that. Go Blue. Oh, my gosh.
Felt like it lasted all break, Mike.
Well, very good. Well, hey, I didn't just watch football, though. I got to do some hiking with the family, which was fun. We decided we had hopes of going skiing, you know, thanks to climate change. That does not seem to be in the cards. So hiking instead. But I'm so excited that I got to go in this area south of Asheville, North Carolina, where they filmed one of my favorite movies of all times, Last of the Mohicans.
Oh, cool.
And it's just, you know, gorgeous, beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains. And we got to hike around there. So that was fun.
Very, very nice. And I was at the Cotton Patch Ponderosa, which is my dad's place out in the country, Mike, with no cell service. So we both got some of nature.
Nice. That sounds pretty nice. That sounds pretty nice. All right. Well, we're back at it. 2024. Dan tells us our 901st episode of the Education Gadfly Show. Pretty amazing. So
Mike, you've been on almost all 901. So that's kudos, right? You were obviously there from the beginning.
From the humble beginnings with my friend Rick Hess. That's right. And the Research Minute has been here for quite a lot of it. All right. Well, what you got for us this week?
We have a new study. An educational researcher, I went back to that one, examines the usefulness of short instructional coaching exercises during teacher prep. So I don't know. This struck me because they were comparing these exercises to a self-reflection on what the pre-teacher did well and needs to improve upon. And I just remember having to do these reflection journals as a student teacher, and I thought they were such a big waste of time. And turns out that they are quite common in teacher prep programs. So I thought, okay, what are they comparing this to? And they're comparing it to a little bit of coaching, 5 minutes of coaching versus reflecting. So they study whether the coaching impacts also hold across different teaching tasks, different modes of delivery, so in-person versus Zoom, different times and different populations of students. Another little side note, the coaching obviously is what they're assessing, but what I thought was really interesting is the software that they were using to coach the students comprises student avatars that are being remotely controlled by actors responding in real time to teacher candidates' instructional and behavioral cues in ways that actual students would. So it's sort of like this metaverse type of thing where it's all occurring in real time. And these actors are mimicking real kids So, you know, instead of you get this practice lesson with your peers, which we used to do, like, let's do a practice lesson with, you know, 12 other people in the program, or, you know, you get your turn when you're officially a student teacher. In this case, you're practicing teaching through a simulation that mimics reality. Again, that's not what's being evaluated, but it sounds pretty cool. Current study takes place at one selective public university in the Southeast. And all four scholars happen to go to UVA. They look at the short-term causal effects of 5 minutes. A five-minute, highly structured and direct coaching session by a trained coach following this real-time simulation. The simulations are tied to the students' coursework. And again, they serve as practice before these kids actually get into a classroom. I say some because some of the students participating aren't in the teacher prep program. They're in this exploring teaching course, which sounds kind of cool. I guess, you know, if you're not really sure you want to be a teacher, you can take a course where you explore it. So some of the kids are in that. Students are practicing mastery with two scenarios. One where they have to redirect off-task behavior. Love that. We need plenty of practice with that as new teachers. And one where they support text-based instruction while leading a small group discussion, which I guess means, you know, trying to get kids to look at the text as opposed to talk about their experiences. Both of which their performance was measured based on assessments designed by the research team. Analysts examined the efficacy and robustness of this standardized coaching protocol in a series of 5 replication studies. Each has got about 100 participants. They randomized candidates to receive coaching via this protocol or to self-reflect on their performance in the simulation. So it's between figure it out yourself or have a coach give you targeted feedback. So I wonder which one will work better.
Yeah.
Groups were equivalent after the randomization. That said, they also look at samples that have been adjusted to see how participant characteristics might moderate the effects of the coaching. Oh my gosh, pages of information about how these 5 RCTs were constructed and carried out. They wanted to make sure there was variation across course sections, across days, across the timing, and so on to control for, you know, potential differences due to the coaching and the effects with the interactor or the avatar. Anyway, it's plenty there if you want to know more, but here are the results. Coaching effects were consistently positive, large, and statistically significant across all of the RCTs, 1.34 standard deviation.
Wow.
Uh-huh, that's a wow. However, the students enrolled in the Exploring Teaching course tended to be younger, more male, less white. They benefited much less. They had statistically insignificant but small positive impacts, which suggests that participants benefit more when they're also receiving courses in instruction and pedagogy in a teacher prep program. In terms of the robustness of the results, they held across the 2 different teaching tasks, the mode of delivery, whether it was in person or Zoom, and the timing of the studies, which range from spring of 2018 to spring 2020. But the studies didn't look at long-term impacts. I think these were short-term impacts. They took place, again, at one university. And I didn't like that the measures that they used to assess impact were, you know, developed by the researchers. They were also, you know, because that meant they were tightly aligned, right, to the intervention, which probably explains why they were so big. Right. Still, results held across these varied conditions. And I thought, hey, it provides pretty decent evidence that short targeted feedback is better than reflecting on your own.
I think that is encouraging, but you're right. The limitations are worth pointing out. It would be good to know if these teachers went on into the classroom and were actually stronger teachers, right? But and we're not like, you know, one feedback session of 5 minutes, you know, 3 years ago is going to make that kind of a difference. But some kind of sustained effort while in teacher prep, maybe while student teaching, you know, ongoing experience from somebody knows what they're talking about, giving good feedback, you would think would help. And hey, let's celebrate that there's at least one ed school out there trying to do this sort of thing.
Yeah, I just want to I want to see these simulations, right? I mean, it's really intriguing. And I have a hard time picturing some like digital character really giving it to a teacher, right? Or let's just say, I want to know how realistic they are, right, Amber? I want to see it for myself. But I mean, it's kind of an interesting idea, right? To put you in the situation and then, you know, maybe, right? Like the idea is that then when the situation arises, you at least have some concept of what to do, which I think is a huge part of the challenge. I mean, honestly, I blacked out for most of what you said about early teachers and attrition and so forth. But a huge part of the stress, right, comes from simply not, and a huge part of, I think, the struggle that many teachers have with classroom control, et cetera, is just stems from uncertainty, right? And not being sure which way to turn. And if we can just give them a clear protocol, set of tools, right, and the confidence to do it, it should help, right? I don't know. I mean, it blows my mind, honestly, the longer we talk about this stuff, like how deeply this like constructivist notion of learning has just seemed to embed itself in the education world, right? I mean, I think we're finally starting to refute it in like for students, right? And be like, well, what if we shared with them, you know, like all the things that we've learned in the past 5,000 years of history, right? But apparently now we need to move up to teaching, right? And also be like, what if we told teachers how to do their job better instead of asking them to figure it out themselves and reflect on their like 3 weeks of teaching experience?
Right. I am reflecting that I'm miserable and I feel like I'm sinking.
Right, exactly. I'm terrible. I agree, you know?
Why can't somebody help me out here? I mean, honestly, it's really ridiculous. I you know, this is why I picked the study. I'm like, I'm sure if any of our listeners are in ed schools having them reflect, please let us know, because it's nothing wrong with reflecting, but my goodness, also like, you know, give us some guidance here.
Right. Yeah, and like David says, we have learned some things.
Yes.
There are better and worse ways of coming at some of these issues. Look, and to be clear, there's some subjects, if he's talking about, you know, high school students and specialized subjects, maybe we don't have as much information as we do for, say, teaching little kids how to read. But there's been a lot of teachers out there that have learned how to, for example, do classroom management effectively or ineffectively. And we should tell them about those lessons.
Yes.
All right. Well, good stuff. All right. Thank you very much, Amber. It is a great way to start off the new year. Very constructive rather than constructivist.
Oh, that was good, Mike.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. All right. Hey, well, that is all the time we've got for this week. And so until next week.
I'm David Griffith.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at fordhaminstitute.org.